Dan Shaughnessy, award-winning columnist for the Boston Globe and a Hall of Famer. I'm getting old, Danny. 2016, the Taylor Spink Award. It feels like yesterday he went in the Hall of Fame. It's 4 years ago. I'm getting old. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Eddie. How you doing?
I'm doing great. So you thought you'd have a vacation down in Miami at this time of year, and bingo, there's no team to go down there for.
Yeah, I was cranking about that in the Sunday Globe tomorrow. I dropped out of the Mosaic level of JetBlue. I had to cancel flights to Kansas City, Baltimore, Miami. I had all this playoff stuff on the docket, and none of it happened.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I think you could probably see that coming as the season wore on, and especially after the Kansas City game, too, that was a fateful day, but that was a pretty good day for the Chiefs up there too.
Yeah, they were the Patriots were kind of fool's gold. I mean, they were 8-0, and you know there was talk of running the table and all that, but it was really a kind of a phony half season that they had because of the level of competition. And ultimately, you know, they lost everybody who was still playing at the end of the year, which was the final four in the AFC. They lost to all of them, not to mention the Miami game at the end of the year when they kind of coughed up the bye and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And I guess that's one thing, too, when I look at Kansas City. I do like them tomorrow, but I hopefully it's going to be a good game. I'll get your thoughts on which way you're leaning. But, you know, it's interesting. They had a better defense and played better defense, I think, down the stretch. Maybe the playoff games exposed that a little bit. But, you know, some of the competition was not the best either. They played the Bears. They played the Broncos, who can't score. Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to tell, hard to kind of gauge, you know.
Yeah, I saw where they gave up like 26 points a game over a certain stretch at the end, and I don't know. I mean, the whole thing is you know, if I had I want Kansas City to win. I think it's a better story. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, they're in the conference that the Pats are in, and love Mahomes, love Andy Reid. Right. I like their track team, all that stuff, and the quick strike capability. If I had to bet it, I'd bet the Niners. Just I think they're more complete, mm-hmm. and I know their defense. You know, as said, they did get touched up a little bit at the end of the year, but not in the playoffs. And I just have a feeling if they can slow down the game, it's, you know, Kansas City looked unstoppable in the playoffs after falling behind, but. I just think this defense is going to be tougher for them.
You know, even though I've been in New York forever, still a Patriots fan, and it's weird for me to watch Jimmy G in another uniform. I wondered whether it's weird for you and the people up there to see that as well, too.
Well, you know, that was a lot of stuff going on here when that happened, and it always felt like they gave him away and didn't get enough, and Bill wanted to put him in a place where he would succeed. That certainly happened. And, you know, his one-loss record is just off the charts as a starter there. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to find out tomorrow how much of it's owed to him, how much of it's game management, or just not, you know, he's one of the more vulnerable parts of their team. And I think he tends to hold the ball too long and turn it over and those kinds of things. But wins and losses, and he's been able to do that. I'm really into this game. I mean, it's weird to not have the Patriots in, and I think America probably loves that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think they do.
Yeah, it's different for us here, but I think it's a really fun matchup.
Yeah, I do too. I hope everyone says it's going to be a very competitive game. I hope that's the case. That's what we need. Even, you know, Pats won last year. That's nice, but it was not a game that's.
That was a rock fight. Yeah, that thing was awful.
Yeah, it was. And they probably
thousand punts.
Yeah, 1,000 punts, and it probably. I thought it would have been a great game if the right team was there. The Saints. I thought the Pats and the Saints would be a great matchup. Myself.
Yeah, Patriots have been so lucky over the decades, and that was another example of it. You know, that missed call, and who knows what would have happened with the call being done correctly? Because I mean, the Saints still had chances, didn't do it, but. You'll never convince me that you know Drew Brees and Sean Payton would have put up a better battle in the Super Bowl than what we saw, you know, from those guys. I just thought the quarterback and coach both came up really short in that game. It was pathetic. And New England was a team that lost five games and had a 3-5 record on the road, and they really weren't that good, but they won. They were better that day, and mm-hmm. things went their way.
While we're on the subject of football, and I know the suite has been cleaned out at Gillette by Giselle or others, but has the house in Brookline been cleaned out for Mr. Brady?
No, this story is just nauseating. I mean, it's just so protracted, and I understand how important it is.
Yeah.
And I vacillate every day. I'm 50-50. I have no idea what he's going to do. No one knows what he's going to do except him and Giselle, evidently. But this whole reading of tea leaves and, you know, cryptic, pictures being sent out there and
kids registering for school in Nashville
Tennessee, and exactly. It's just preposterous. And I give up, but I understand that it's really important. And when it comes down, it'll be a big deal. And I'm willing to wait the 7 weeks or whatever it takes until it comes down. I just think that the level of narcissism and just self-absorption around this thing is just off the charts.
I would agree. I tend to agree with that. Absolutely. You know, we just had Eli Manning retire down here, and you certainly got the sense that Eli was going to retire even, you know, in the days prior to it. And I think that, you know, it made sense, and he had a great career, all in one uniform. With Brady, I mean, it can be the same thing. I wonder, he's never had, you know, free agency, and maybe never desired it, but he does have it now, so I wonder if that makes the difference with him at this point or stage.
I mean, I kind of wish Tom had just stopped last year when they won. The confetti's coming down in his head, and it was perfect symmetry, and that would have been it. I'm not all about this TB12 or playing at 45, and what I saw this year wasn't very good, and I just think if he goes somewhere else, it's liable to look not very good. Mm-hmm. And despite the lack of weapons here, that he's still protected with the system that they have, the complex offense, getting rid of the ball quickly, throwing to the backs, that he's well served to stay in that protection area here. If you try to make him a, you know, three-step drop and just go back and fling it down the field, I think it'll be really ugly.
Yeah, interesting. You know, one other thing on this, Danny, and this, because if Brady does go somewhere, if he does go somewhere else and change uniforms, What's in Belichick's head? What is, because there are a number of quarterbacks out there and veteran guys that he could reach for or could talk to. What's your thoughts on that?
Whatever it is, Bill's already got it in mind, I just, you know, I wonder about the mechanics of you know, March 17th. It's hard for me to believe that Bill's going to wait till then to have things in place. Whatever it is, so you might see some motion on this preemptive on his part. And it is probably a showdown with the owner and the coach there, and I think Bill's ready to go to the next guy, and whether it's Stidham or I mean, my God, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, the ginger hammer in Cincinnati there, whichever guy you want to look at, I have no idea. Bill does, and I think he sees that as a challenge. And again, in this crap division they're in, with the Jets and Dolphins sucking every year, and the Bills liable to come back to earth with their quarterback,
right.
I think they know they can win just showing up here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they won 11 games with Matt Cassel. I think they can do it again.
I think that's probably true. Dan Shaughnessy, the Boston Globe, our guest here on The Fan, as we take you to four here this afternoon. Let's move to the Red Sox and the Mookie drama as that continues, and we hear the Dodgers and all that stuff. And it's hard for me to believe that this guy would go elsewhere. Where the talent that he is, but you know, I guess the Red Sox, at least what they're chirping now at this point in time is, you know, we can, you know, get the world for this guy, etc. Let's do it now. Where do you sit on this thing?
Well, I mean, they're not, you know, they're going to be trading 50 cents on the dollar now, because whoever gets him is just going to have 1 year of his service time. So you know, it's going to be tough to get a boatload for him. He's obviously one of the top five players in the game. He wants to be paid like number two in the game. And I don't sense any attachment with him with this place, and not in a bad way. I just think he wants to find out what's out there. And I think he's not been amenable to talking about an extension here. And I understand that. So it's just going to be weird to have them try to sell, you know, the reset of the five-year plan. And, you know, with all the funds that they have and the prices they charge and the payroll they've had, this notion of resetting and getting under the luxury tax threshold, it's not a real party starter for the fans here. And if you, in addition to all that deal, you know, your best player, your MVP from 2 years ago, I think it'll be a big blow to the region in terms of how the team is perceived, and it'll be hard for them to dig out from that. So we're just sort of on standby. It feels like that they are going to trade him. I mean, now they got David Ortiz out there, you know, the height of hypocrisy, you know, talking about, you know, given the management side of this, and I guess they have to do it and all this. I mean, nobody complained more about contracts and players getting job by rich owners than David. And now he's part of the state run, you know, mandate, the company line that they're putting out there. And so it just feels like they're greasing the skids for that. Dodgers, Padres, whatever, nothing would surprise us. I kind of like to see him, let him play here this year and have a hell of a year, and then have them, you know, bid for services, everybody else. And if he won't go with you, then, you know, you get a fifth round pick and see you later, and nice having you. But I think if they trade him, they're probably going to include, you know, Price or Eovaldi, And to me, it's going to be a complete white flag on the 2020 season.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the best way to go is, you know, to keep him at this point in time and hope for the best at the end. He has a good season, they have a good season, and wants to stay. The other part of this, too, Danny, is the hammer hasn't fallen. You know, I forget when the whole thing came down with Houston, but we still get calls daily here about Houston, what's going to happen, the Astros, the cheating, et cetera, and that hasn't dropped yet on the Red Sox, but it will, you know, here soon, too.
Right, and there's an unusual level of confidence around here. With ownership and players who have spoken. Devers is latest to do it. He talked to Stan Grossfeld of the Globe yesterday, and of course J.D. Martinez expressed this at their carnival, whatever the winter thing that they do, and that nothing's going to happen to them. That they're going to get this thing broomed and nothing to see here. So I'm not as convinced of that as they are around here, and I think. Boy, there'd be a lot of noise if they come up empty on the Sox after what they did at Houston. Yeah. I'll never think that the Red Sox level of transgression was anywhere approaching what Houston was up to. But it's also impossible to believe that Alex Cora goes from there to here,
right?
And they win 118, and there's nothing going on. It's just, and then you have three sources of the Athletic saying stuff to them. I know none of them are named like Flyers in this case, so that's what they're into. But it's an awful lot of confidence about an investigation that is yet to be completed, and that always dazzles me. It makes me wonder if there is a bag job with the commissioner and the Red Sox.
Yeah, no, that, no question. And you know, the thing is, I knew Alex when he was here as a utility player, and knew him over the years in baseball. Always respected him, liked him, as a matter of fact. But at the same time, there's no question that he and Beltran were the architects of this whole thing in Houston, and it didn't have any legs if not for him, for sure.
Yeah, we love Alex, and he's good at everything.
Yeah,
he's really good at the organic sign stealing, and that's the purity of it. And he took a lot of pride in that.
Yeah.
But I just think with the availability of the electronics maybe was a little too much to resist. And don't forget, the Sox got caught in the Apple Watch thing in 17 when John Farrell was the manager.
That's
so
true. Yeah, yeah.
They're second-time offenders in this, and there was a lot of warnings in 17, which Houston was held accountable to. And now the Sox are on deck for whatever's coming their way. And like I said, it's going to be interesting. And they don't even have a manager.
That's right.
This is like with the truck leaves on Monday. There's no manager of this team. I mean, this is an amazing situation that we're into. The Boston Red Sox, a week before the truck leaves, now or 2 days before, there's no manager in the team.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Mets were in the same situation before their fan fest, and they went out and they bumped up Luis Rojas. And I get one of the guys that I heard, I'm not even sure how to pronounce his name, Luis Urieta?
One of the coaches in Arizona,
right.
The Torrey Lovello guy.
And, yeah, Torrey.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, I understand having young guys that are bilingual is a great attraction to that, but
right.
Again, that's going to be a tough sell, too, because no one knows anything about him.
Right.
I mean, even as a player, I think he's from Colombia and you know, highly regarded. People here like Lovello, but that's not going to have the, I don't know, it's not like bringing in Buck Showalter
or
Dusty Baker, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no question. Dan Shaughnessy of the Boston Globe, our guest here. Did you watch the Kobe stuff last night from L.A.? And
you know, I saw the whole... the one during the week with Ernie and Shaq. And,
gotcha. Okay.
And I saw that whole hour, and I kind of, that was enough, and I had other stuff going. So I did not see the pregame last night. I'm sure it was touching, and they did a wonderful job.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting. The Lakers and Celtics have had a long and storied history, you know, beat LA and all that stuff. It's hard to watch. It's painful to watch, and Kobe certainly made his mark, I think, and touched a lot of people here across this country. I think that's been obvious to see here in the last week, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was in our town. It's hard to believe we're at 6 days now, but, you know, we just saw him once a year, kind of like you guys did. You
exactly.
Never got 60 here, but, you know, it'd come through. And then in 08, we had the finals, and the Celtics beat them in six, and Paul Pierce was MVP, and that was amazing in itself. And then they came back with two more, and in 10, they did it against Boston, and he was MVP, you know, it was, in our view, kind of the carry the torch after, you know, Jerry West and on to Chamberlain and Baylor and then Kareem and Magic and then Kobe being the latest incarnation of that whole thing. It was always, I mean, in my view, the NBA was always better when the Celtics and Lakers were both good at the same time.
Sure.
Like,
yep.
It's always better when the Knicks are good. We're still waiting for that to come back.
What's going on with you? It's only been about 40 years, Dan. Don't worry. We'll turn the corner any day now. You know, when I was watching the Kobe stuff last night, my thoughts went back, and I'm sure you love this guy like I love this guy, too. And John Havlicek, when he passed away in 2019, I mean, he was my guy when I was growing up, and selfless basketball player who thought about winning all the time and didn't care whether he came off the bench or started or whatever. He just did whatever it took, and that really hit home when he passed away. And I think it was April of last year. Yeah,
John was a healthy older guy. Like a lot of those basketball guys have really long lives because they're in such great shape and
sure.
they take care of themselves. And it's been an honor through the decades to be able to talk to Sam Jones and Bill Russell and Heinsohn and Havlicek and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. to see him start to lose those guys is tough on us baby boomer types. And John certainly, he was honored really nicely here. And there was a big event at Trinity Church. And, Russell and Cousy came back, Cousy spoke, and Senator Bill Bradley came out for it, and he had a fitting send-off for John Havlicek.
Yeah, well, that's as should be, for sure. There's no question. Hey, Danny, enjoyed the time, as always. Enjoy the game tomorrow, too, okay? Minus the Patriots. I'm sure you will.
I will. Thanks, Eddie. Take care.